A year after the Brooklyn community of Crown Heights was torn apart by rioting, a coalition group has issued a report with a strategy for the future. The report commends my guest, Richard Green, for public leadership during the crisis. We called him to talk about what he did to try to stop the violence. Green is a member of the coalition that wrote the report, and he directs the Crown Heights Youth Collective. Crown Heights is a racially and ethnically divided neighborhood of African Americans and ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jews. In August of last year, a car escorting the leader of the Hasidic community went out of control, jumped the curb, and killed Gavin Cato, a 7-year-old African American. The death inflamed already tense relations between African Americans and the Hasidim. A visiting Jewish scholar was stabbed to death in apparent retaliation. There were 3 days of rioting. A grand jury investigated the auto death and found no cause to indict the driver. The trial begins next week for the African-American man accused of stabbing the Jewish scholar. Richard Green told me as soon as he heard about the death of Gavin Cato, he knew there would be violence.
I heard a little split on the 11 o'clock news when I came in the house, and no sooner the news came on, and it was the end of the news, and they made a little indication of it. And soon after that, my phone rang, and it was the mayor's office calling to find out what was happening out in Crown Heights. And from that point on, I realized that this was going to be a protracted situation. It wasn't going to be just another car accident.
So it was 11 o'clock when you found out that Gavin Cato had been struck by a car driven by a Lubavitcher. What'd you do? Did you go back out?
Well, that's exactly what the mayor's office asked me to do. They asked me to come down to the precinct. And at that time, I went down to the precinct and spoke there soon after the mayor arrived and the police commissioner. And that's where we went to it. From there, we went into starting to put our heads together and huddle to find out how we were going to contain this. And again, I just want to just indicate the fact that the mayor was there, and he came in, and by coming in when he did come in, at the time he came in and at the force in which he came in, maintained the situation and contained it, that it did not again go the route that South Central LA went.
Let me read something from the Crown Heights report that just came out after the year anniversary of the incident. The Crown Heights Youth Collective and its executive director, Richard Green, deserve special recognition for public leadership during the crisis. Green was a visible conciliator in the streets. He was out there with a mobile van, bullhorn, imposing physical presence and integrity. He was a mediator, ombudsman, and role model. What were you saying into that bullhorn during the actual crisis?
One of the first things I made fact known to young people is if you destroy what you have here now, there's nothing else left for you. You're destroying your own community. You're destroying your own home. I told them it's fine, and I'm very much angered along with them in the sense that we've seen a young 7-year-old life lost. But at the same time, that was an accident, and we must understand if we're going to be demonstrating, we must demonstrate creatively. We must begin to reach the things in our neighborhood, to develop our neighborhoods and revitalize our neighborhoods so these things don't happen anymore.
Were there rumors that you knew were going around that were making people very angry that you wanted to straighten out?
Yeah, there were rumors. There were definite rumors. We'll give you a good example. It came down day number 2 that the young child, the young girl had died also after the accident. That came out, and it came out almost as fact. We had just finished speaking to the hospital. The mayor had already spoken and found a young girl was doing well and had been progressing as well as to be expected under conditions. So we knew differently. But that got out there, and as soon as that got out there, folks began to react to it. So we were out there to let our young people know the rumors were rumors and the facts were facts.
It's been a little over a year since the Crown Heights incident. How has your daily work changed since then?
It has changed tremendously because we have always been on always been continuous alert because anything and everything could again, spark things off. So we have made a point to always be on alert, and we've been doing a lot of street outreach. We talk to these young people on a daily basis. We are out there in the streets. We find out where they are. We go to their confines and speak to them and get the feeling from them. What, for instance, we know that this next trial is coming up next week. Last evening, we were out there talking to some of these young people to find out how they're feeling about this trial that's coming up of a young man who was accused of stabbing the Lubavitch student. Some of them right away will say, well, why should our young man be tried and they were not tried? And then we have to distinguish between the two issues that we're talking about. Apples and oranges are two different situations altogether. One is a young man who was accused of a situation that was an accident, and the other was a young man who was accused of allegedly committing an offense, which was homicide.
Yeah, one was an alleged stabbing, the other was an auto accident.
So these are the kinds of things that we have to continuously talk to our young people so they can distinguish, because passion is just rolling and raging on. People feel strongly about things, and it's based, like I'm quite sure that everyone knows, based on some perceptions that has been there for years. And these young people have these perceptions, and they've been fed these perceptions by their peers and by their elders, and they're reacting to them. And in doing so, we have to make sure that it does not spill over to the next level.
How much interaction is there now between the African-American and Hasidic communities in Crown Heights? Is there any more or less interaction than there was a year ago?
Oh, there's a lot more. There's a lot more happening now. People are talking more now. There have been committees formed, and we've had basketball games. We've had women's groups speaking to other women's groups. In our community, we have had we've done a mural together. We've done a lot of other things that has not showed up in the box score that's different from last year, and I think that's a good sign, and it's an indication that we're moving on in this direction, and we're going to be continuing this dialogue, and we're going to continue to talk. See, because I feel what happens in Crown Heights could be an example to all of the whole complete nation as well as the world. You have two most diverse people, two most passionate people in terms of the African community and the Hasidic community coexisting side by side. And if we can make it work here in Crown Heights, I think it could be a shining example to the rest of the world that when clear and conscious-minded people come together and set their sights on doing something positive and creative and harmonious, that it can work.
Now, I understand that you organized the painting of a unity mural across from where Gavin Cato was hit by the car.
Yes.
Is that right? You were organizing that?
I was one of the people that helped organize it.
And there were African Americans and Hasidic Jews painting the mural together.
Yes.
And then after the mural was completed, it was defaced by graffiti.
Right. Well, it was defaced by not just graffiti. It was defaced by folks who were willfully going after making a statement by writing on this mural. There were young people involved with painting that mural, so their work was I would say vandalized, and it just goes again to show a lot of times the selfishness on the part of adults, because it was adults involved with doing this, and we're going to eventually go back and do it over again. And we're now moving to have a school named after Gavin Cato as a permanent commemoration, the school he last attended. And that's going to be a little harder for folks to try to deface that effort.
I have one last question. What are your greatest frustrations now?
My greatest frustration is that the world is not seeing the picture of inner city of America, that the suburbs and folks that are not living in inner city are not looking in here and seeing the dangers of what is being developed throughout our inner cities. And not being able to put the kind of emphasis on creating the opportunities for these young people to see a brighter life. And that's my greatest frustration right now. If the world would begin to look inward and see what we could do here. I know there's a lot of things happening in other parts of the planet now that we need to look at, but look home first, and as we look home, then we can begin to stress other things to other people.
Richard Green directs the Crown Heights Youth Collective in Brooklyn. This is Fresh Air.